in the colder regions, but also to warm our inside, warm our heart. And just a few breaths in and in through the mouth, in through the nose, excuse me, and out through the mouth. And one more time. Palms pressed together towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls, the only being, I'm going to say that many times throughout this class, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Take these sacred syllables from the mandala of the mouth, blow those sacred words into the palms of your hands, and let that blessing flow over and through your entire being. Well, any of you that have read the biography of Hazarata Nikon know that he spent quite some time in the Himalayas wandering and meeting with various holy men. And in his teachings, you know, it's very subtle. You'll get what you can out of it. And if you read it again and again, you'll get more and more. It's layers that we peel away, like an onion that St. Teresa used to talk about, peeling away the layers of the onion to get to the pearl. And often I have thought, Murshid has a Buddhist bent to him. And this teaching, I will try to help illustrate that from at least my understanding. And the Buddhists always talk about the interconnectedness of things, that there is nothing that arises independently of itself. Everything is dependent upon everything else, and hence the interconnectedness of all things. In the words of Hazrat Anayat Khan, he says, the idea of the Sufi is to uncover their self, that's the small as self. And this one can accomplish by contemplation upon the idea of God, whatever form that takes for you. And he says, contemplation upon the ideal of God, which is the absolute oneness. I know you've all heard the Chinese proverb that says, the flapping of the wings of a butterfly can be felt on the other side of the world. Again, it demonstrates the interconnectedness of all things. And Murshid talks about this a lot, that if one being is suffering, we all in some way suffer. And so, you know, raising ourselves up, our consciousness up, and that can help to elevate, you know, it's like the lever. I'm at a lat, but there's this beautiful quote by St. Teresa, the little flower, and I think it's something like, with the lever of love, I can lift the world. What a beautiful thing to think about. So this teaching, these are again words of an icon. There's an Arabic saying, and it says, if you know God, you must know yourself. If you know God, you must know yourself. And this has been a recurring theme over the last few months. We've talked about this. I'm not sure why I'm getting those messages, but anyway, go away. Sorry about that. Everyone can hear me okay? And he says, Murshid says, how little we know while we are in the intoxication of individualism. We're in the intoxication of individualism. We think, I'm a separate being. You are another. There's no connection between you and me. And we all have our own joys and free will. If we but knew, our life is dependent not only on the objects and things that keep the body alive, but also on the activity of 1,000 minds in a day. Now, to put it in a Buddhist context, I had the opportunity several times to be in Dharamsala with the Dalai Lama, His Holiness, while he gave teachings. And he was giving a teaching on dependent arising. and the interconnectedness of all things. And he gave this example, because the especially the Indian women and the Tibetan women, they go in the most beautiful clothing there. You know, the Westerners, they look like Indiana Jones with their big boots and sweaters and hats and stuff. But the local women, the women, the Tibetan women, with these beautiful silk blouses and these, it's called a chupa, a Tibetan dress with an apron if they're married, which signifies that. But at any rate, the blouses are so beautiful and colorful, mostly in one color, but different colors. Everyone's wearing different colors. And so he gives that as an example. He says, for example, the beautiful silk blouses, just think of that. All the interconnectedness of things. First, there has to be the silkworm. Then there has to be the silk that's spun. Then there has to be the cloth that's made. Then there's the person that cuts the cloth and makes the dress and ships it to us. And then shopkeeper. And you know, he goes on and on. He uses this very literal example to show us that. Merchant will give us other examples down, but I wanted to highlight that this is a very simple example. You know, we say grace over our food, but my God, if we think of that point of origin when those seeds are planted to when that food arrives on our table, so many beings to be thankful for. It's quite incredible. So back to Hazarat and Icon. If we only knew it, our life is dependent not only on the objects and things that keep the body alive, but also on the activity of 1,000 minds a day. Every time a person laughs, it is a reflection of their mind. Controlled by the power of another person's mind. Well, think about it. We were just talking about watching television. I mean, a movie, a commercial, a joke we read on, you know, whatever, in a book, a book we're reading. All of those things have an influence of our mind, on our mind. They inform us in some way, and they can have an effect on how we think and how we feel. So he goes on to say, every time a person laughs, it's the reflection of their mind, controlled by the power of another person's mind. Why do we feel sometimes sad? Sometimes glad, sometimes cheerful, sometimes enthusiastic, sometimes tired without reason, sometimes depressed and exhausted. We meet so many minds throughout the day and the night, which are reflected on our mind. And so our thoughts are changed, seemingly without reason. Yet the whole activity of life depends on these thoughts and is changed according to them. So, you know, you know this, you've had this experience. Perhaps you've left the home in one mood and by the time you've arrived somewhere, you feel differently. Maybe not even listening to the radio or anything, but we do know music can affect us. The news can affect us. Sometimes the aspect of someone's breath can affect us. You know, we can, just the idea of someone being, you know, excited or, you know, that can affect us. And I'll speak a little bit more about that in a moment. Anayat Khan says, who then can say, I am an individual, independent and free? I think as I wish, and I can do what I wish. We are all not doing what we wish, he says. We're not thinking what we wish, he says. There are various thoughts around us in the form of people, and animals, and nature, and he says even entities, which influence our mind and feeling and thoughts. We cannot escape them. No one can escape being affected by another person's mind. You know, the Sufis, we train that way. We want to understand what's in our mind, but the best way is to also look at things from another's point of view, not just our own. They say, in fact, that is the definition of a Sufi, being able to look at things from our own point of view and the point of view of another. Look it up if you want. Murshid says that. That's what it means to be a Sufi. There's always some person stronger than us. There's always someone weaker than ourselves. We are connected with one another. Our lives are tied together. And there is a link in which we can see one current running through all. There are many globes and lamps, and yet one current is running through all. On the website, I had that picture of those lamps, different globes, different colors, but one current. Of course, that one current is God. It's the thing that connects all of us. There will always be coming and going back to the source, the one source. And now, just for a moment, this one current running through all, Murshid also, in Sufi Message Volume 13, the Gathas on the breath, Posse on Fas, he talks about this. You might want to spend a little time. And Pirmoinadine has done a wonderful job teaching us the Kasab breaths, refocusing on us, giving different commentary, his own realization, sharing that with us. But, you know, there's so much in the breath. If I always tell students, if there's nothing else you do every day, do the breaths and do the prayers. To me, these are the two wheels, the tracks that lead you to your enlightenment, your realization. But he talks about the quality of the breath and how, and he gives this analogy to like a little stream, to a river, to an ocean. And he says, the power of our breath leads to the sphere of our influence. So also we can have greater control over our emotions and, God willing, our health and many things through the power of breath. So to develop that and to continually be aware of that. Murshid Samuel Lewis, and I think you can look now online, there's a whole database of his teachings. And on Hazrat Anayat Khan's teachings on breath, Murshid Samuel Lewis gave commentary. So it was Tasawwuri Murshid, in the manner of Murshid. And it's called The Culture of Breath. It's a good thing to study, but you can study it within yourself just by observing your breath and observing the breath of others. I know I've said this many times, but I think it's worthy of saying here. Murshid Avira always advised, before going into the room of an ill person, make sure your breath is in the right nostril so it's more solar, it's more radiant, it's more optimistic, and you don't, if you're receptive, you can draw in the vibrations of the ill person when really in truth what we're trying to do is uplift them and help them in some way. So not to draw that into ourselves, but to radiate love and light and optimism and healing is the way to do it. Right nostril breath. A lot of information here. I hope I can get through the whole class, and I hope you'll stick with me because I think it's worth it. Checking my time. The mystic seeks to realize this constantly. In other words, that there's this one current running through all of us. The mystic seeks to realize this constantly and to impress it on the mind in whatever is seen. What for the mystic are the waves of the sea? I'm looking out here now at our window to the sea. It rises and falls and it merges into the sea. The new wave is a different wave altogether. What for the mystic is the tree? So in other words, the wave can rise and say, I am me, I am a wave. But where does it go back to? It goes back to the sea. And in that way, Murshid talks about it like a ladder or a string or a pole. And at one end, we are there. And at the other end, God is there. But we have this pole. Where do we decide to reside within that context? In a polarity? Or do we decide to move closer and closer towards God? I don't think we need to try to pull God towards us. I think we need to elevate ourselves towards God consciousness. More about that in a moment. The new wave is a different wave altogether. What for the mystic is a tree? There's a stem, the leaves spring from it, change their color and drop off. This is the natural evolution of things. This is also the nature of impermanence. We've all come from this divine source, and pretty soon we'll make that journey back again when we cease to be in this bodily form. So the leaves drop off, but at the same time, the life of the whole tree depends on the root and stem, and any damage done to either of these, either the effect of every branch and every bough, the low-lying heavy branches, there, and every part of the tree is affected. What for the mystic, and this is something they do in Buddhist dialectics, you've seen them, the monks debate. So that's him. And they say, are you your eyes? Are you your nose? Are you your head? Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? And it's so showing us that it's hard to say where the mind resides, where the consciousness is. Is it in this body? Is it out of this body? Does it exist when the body leaves us? Very Buddhist. So Murshid says, what for the mystic is the body? The eyes, the nose, the head? Which of them are the self? The hand has a separate name. The fingers have separate names. All the parts have different names. Myriad of thoughts and imaginations. Myriads of feelings. Can we ever number their variety? The different emotions, the different kinds of sorrows, the different grades of joy. Can we ever distinguish them and clarify them? Our being has so many aspects. But what is it, after all, that calls itself I or me? It is one, not many. It is the one, not many. It is simply that if we had no body or mind, we could not realize that we exist. So we're given this gift of a body and a mind to know that we exist. And as Pure Vilayat said many times, all this is God needing, or seeing, maybe not needing, God is understanding him, her, itself through us too. Through all this variety, one realizes, I am one. I am one. Or we could say, I'm united with the one, if that's easier to digest. So there's this practice. And usually I ask people in our Sufi circle, our immediate circle, to do the practices if they can, 101 times a day, if not 33 times a day, if not 11 times a day, you know, just to do them. The practice is Ahad. Ahad. With a definite stop on that D. And a definite ha on the Ahad. It is another name for God. And it means the one and only. It also means unity. And how about this for the definition? Think about this. Ahad is the center of a circle without a circumference. So here we have this idea of that Big Bang, which I like to use all the time, that singular moment of which creation just emerges, and it is always creating itself far, far out in space. It's all—it's just constantly being creative and generative. So anyway, that's what it's like. This single point in a circle without a circumference. So let's do this. We'll just do it 11 times. And we'll say, Yah, Ahad. Yah 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 Ahad. Just remember, the center of a circle which has no circumference. Remember that. The center in a circle that has no circumference. The same ideas work further in the mind until a person finds that oneness which exists behind all things and all numerous names and forms. and in which we will unite with God. This shows that the experience of individuals, the thoughts, feelings, and knowledge of individuals, and the experience of nations, of races throughout all ages and periods of history, have not belonged only to individuals, not even to the multitude of nations, the races, but have always gone back till they came to the depth where they were assimilated with what is called divine mind. Divine mind. It's a beautiful term. Mirsha doesn't use it very often, but we can contemplate that. He goes on to say, all the different minds are the different leaves of the one tree. He comes back to this metaphor a second time in this teaching. He must consider it important. Some minds, minds are branches. Some are boughs, the larger branches of the tree. And there is only the one source to which it is all attached. No object or life can exist without one central point. The point in the center of a circle that has no circumference. No object or life can exist without one central point in which everything meets and joins together. And that meeting ground, meeting dash ground, very specifically says meeting hyphen ground, is the divine mind. The Brahmins therefore taught people to bathe in the place where the rivers meet. The purification of life was symbolized by bathing in the Sangam. This means the confluence of rivers. That's why we have these great meetings, you know, spiritual meetings in India at the confluence of the great rivers. Those who really understood knew that this pictured the divine mind. Okay, now we're talking about human and divine. Where do those meet? The meeting ground of the divine mind. Very important. Try to absorb what Murshid is telling us, with Hazrat and Icon is telling us. Those who really understood knew that this pictured the divine mind, that life's purification lies in touching that depth of life's seas in which the myriads of forms and names are joined. Joined. We are joined. We are connected. We're interconnected. The activity of all beings is directed from the center. Again, the dot in the center of a circle that has no circumference. What is that dot? What is that dot? The Quran, the Holy Quran, says that no single atom moves independently of the hand of God. So all of these joys, all of these sorrows, all of these loss, all of these gains were said, they're the movement of the hand of God. You remember one time I gave that teaching to this group on thank you, God, for everything. If you don't remember it, go to sufi-message.org and Google, or in the our search function, thank you, God, for everything. I might even post it with this, Gemma, if you'll remind me, because it's such a beautiful teaching, how we can change our mind through gratitude and thinking that everything is the blessing of God, no matter how awful it may seem. It can be some, there's the hand of God in there teaching us. That is, no activity or of any kind takes place either here or in the starry space, he says, I would say the infinite universe, without the impulse from within, from the depth of life where all minds and the effects are all of all activity unite. My mom always told me, I'm sure she heard it somewhere else, but I think it's a good thing. She always said, the testament of who you really are is not what you do when people are watching you, but it's what you do when you're alone. So remember that. We're always having an influence somehow. God, I miss my mama. So the next practice I'd like to do is Ya Wahid. Yahweh. We began with Ah. There's a lot of Ahs in this class. So Wahid is the one, the creator of diversity from unity. So for, again, this singular point, the dot in the circle, everything emerges. That big bang, bam, it all comes from that source. What must have happened that was so cataclysmic that it was that spark that created everything? Think about that. You know, sometimes it's through struggle. Sometimes it's through a hard knock, you know. We learn, we grow, we understand. So again, the creator of diversity from unity, the manifestation of unity, and it is the unique starting point from which all else is risen. So maybe Wahid is the dot, and all the everything else, including the dot, is the Ahad. So I know I have enough time, but I'm going to keep going because things keep coming in. I want to elaborate. So again, we'll just do Yahwahid. And remember, it's Wahid. Do that at the end with your tongue. You'll feel something happening to the energy flow here. Again, for our group, if you can do 101 times a day, beautiful. If you can only do 33 times a day, beautiful. If you can only do 11 times a day, beautiful. Just do it. Okay. Yahwahid. 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 The creative diversity from unity, the source from which we all are coming, and the source from which we will all return. Yahwahid. And now Murshid goes to another aspect of this teaching. He sort of tells us this, then he gives us various analogies, and now he's going to what he calls, now coming to the moral side of the subject. He's telling us three different ways. He's a good teacher. We may ask in what way we should carry on our life. Then he says, or ask, should we be satisfied by depending on one power working? That would be just like paralysis of a part of the body. So this, God will take care of it. Well, you know, it's hand in hand. Divine mind, human mind. Divine will, human will. We have to take up, you know, we have to take up our part. We're here for a reason. So in one way, surrendering to the will of God. And then when the spirit of guidance arises, we get a sign to do something. Just do it, like Nike says, just do it. Should we be satisfied with depending on one power working? He says, that would be like paralysis of a part of the body. The hand would not move. Just think, where have our thoughts and our impulses come from? Well, that's interesting. In the Buddhist context, they call it, there's a field that's pure, it's like pure light in a way. And that's the mind field. And things that are individuated, like the waves of the sea, can be our thoughts or contemplation of impressions that have come to us. Or perhaps they're even karmic seeds that are coming to fruition. But nonetheless, in its pure state, it's just this field of light. So where do these thoughts and impulses come from? Then he goes on to ask, should we act upon every impulse that comes? Good question. Should we not take action in every case, seeing they all come from God? I've known some people that have gotten locked up doing whatever they wanted by saying it's all God and God told me to do it. Be careful. You have to use some discernment. Contemplate. In Murshid's answer to that question, no, for it is the realization of the mind that makes things right and wrong, good or bad, spiritual or material. Now remember, we started this conversation with talking about TV. I said it's all spiritual. The spiritual material dance together. But Murshid says, no, for the realization of the mind that makes things right or wrong, good or bad, spiritual and material. It is our own thought, not the action. It is our own thought, not the action. It is as you make it. Wow, there's a lot in there. I don't know if you feel it, but I do. It's our own thought, not the action. It is as you make it. Now, I'm going to take this back to the Buddhist teachings, because there it is all about intention and motivation. What is our intention and what is our motivation when we say something, do something, act upon something? This is very important to think about. Are our motivations tainted? Are the motivation for self or for others? We have to think this way, if we can just pause. Sometimes hard to do in the heat of the moment, but it really is worthwhile contemplating this. So now Murshid goes on, there's another layer. So he talks about the moral, now he's going to talk about the mystical aspect. The mystic is guided by their own mind. But remember, a mystic is tuned in to the universe, to tuned into that divine mind, to the impulses, to the signs and signals that come from nature. They're tuned in. The veil between self and others is very thin. They can tune to these messages in Sufism, signs, ayats. The mystic is guided by their own mind. That which we seek in life, we must give to another. How beautiful is that? And haven't we heard that in all religious traditions? That which we seek in life, we must give to another. If it is kindness, give it. If it is goodness, give it. If it is service, give it. The whole secret of happiness in life lies in this. When we seek happiness in the kindness of another, it means we depend on the kindness of another person to make us happy. That's tainted. That lacks the proper motivation, we could say. Let me say that again. When we seek happiness in the kindness of another, it means we depend on the happiness of another person to make us happy. What a burden that puts upon another person, too. Murshid goes on to say, and as long as we look to another to make us happy, we keep expecting that which we ought to have given. It's interesting to think about. I had a dear friend, her name was Alima. I often go to her for guidance. Her veil was very thin. She actually died very young. I think she was in her 60s, but anyway. She'd always say, and you've heard it, I know, she'd always say, giving is a way to receiving. Giving is a way to receiving. And she'd say, it's like priming the well. It's like priming the well. I'm going to go back and read that again. When we seek happiness in the kindness of another, it means that we depend on the kindness of another to make us happy. And as long as we look to another to make us happy, we keep expecting that which we ought to ourselves be giving. Not until then do we know what is justice. And you know, I was reading this, Murshid didn't quote it. He sometimes does quote from the Bible, but you know, it made me think of that quote in the Holy Bible by Matthew, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's like that. It's the exact same teaching. So Mershad goes on. We have just a little bit more and a practice. I think I'm making my time very well. Thank you, God. Thank you, Mershad. The world is a dome where every action is an echo of another. The world is a dome where every action is the echo of another. Pir Vilayat, when we do those leader retreats with him, he used to impress this upon us a lot. And he'd always say, you know, he'd always refer it to as the Akashic record. Whatever we're doing is being recorded somewhere. And there is an accounting for that at some point, whether on earth or when we leave this earth. The world is a dome where every action is the echo of another. What's that scientific? Every action has an equal and or opposite. Is that right, Joe?
Reaction.
A reaction, yeah. So it's also there in science. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Think about that. Wow. You know, spiritual and spiritual material meeting. You know, the Dalai Lama, might want to look these up on YouTube. He has these conferences. I don't know that he's doing them anymore because he's not traveling so much. But, you know, he met with these great minds, the minds of science and math and physics and psychology. They were called the Mind Life series. And he was very fascinated because, as you might imagine, the traditional teaching of the Tibetan Buddhist monks and lamas and teachers to be are, as they should be, very focused on scripture. And they describe the universe or the creation of the universe in a very unique way. But he also saw the need for modern education to come in. So he would have these conferences with these, and they're all recorded, and they're discussing a subject, and the different minds are together discussing them, and Dalai Lama is also there, making inquiries. It's fascinating to watch those, and it gives a lot of insight into human psychology, our understanding of the world. And I remember there was one, and I'm going to probably get this a little wrong, but there was this, I don't know if I was watching this or I read this, where His Holiness met with Carl Sagan, and Carl Sagan, well, what if we could prove our idea of the creation of the universe is different than your own? And then he said, well, I guess we just have to change our minds. You know, I mean, it was like not attached. It's like, well, if you have something better, we can go with that. So, you know, that's the kind of openness and inquisitiveness and no mind, don't know. Isn't that another one that we say? So, you know, those little sayings really have a deep mystical meaning to them. So anyway, I digress, but hopefully it's helpful in some way. So he says, goes on, I'll read just that little few sentences. The world is a dome where every action is the echo of another. Do good, it will come back. If not from one person, it will come from another. So sometimes there may be an expectation, I do this for this person, they're going to do something nice for me. No. The universe doesn't do that. But there is kind of this metaphysical, mystical scale, I think. We do sometimes, if we're aware of it, it returns to us in some fashion. It happened to me twice this week. I had some queries in my own mind, and people that I didn't even know said something to me. It's like, oh, there it is. That's the answer. Thank you. I mean, it's amazing if you're open to it. You do not know from which side it will come. It will come 100-fold more than you give. It will come 100-fold more than you give. Wow. That we can take to the bank. You get it with interest, a lot of interest. If we give love, will we get coldness? If we do good, can we get evil? We cannot be a judge of the action of another. until we ourselves are selfless. And the truth is yes, sometimes we do give love and it's returned as coldness. And sometimes we do good and evil can fall upon us. And sometimes bad things happen to good people. And sometimes people are very ill and they're very good people. But if we look beyond the beyond, there's something that we can learn from that. That's something that's teaching us. And those people that are suffering in that way are like real bodhisattvas because they're in our lives to help us learn something. And they've made this great sacrifice to help us. Think about that. So again, if we give love, will we get coldness? If we do good, will we get evil? We cannot be the judge of the action of another person until we ourselves are selfless. Only then will justice come to us. Only then will we understand the nature of justice. This is a really deep subject. It's one I think I'd like to research more of what Murshid is speaking of here in terms of justice. I think it's something we don't really truly understand in many ways. He goes on to say, and this is something we could contemplate, self is the wall between us and justice. So our ideas, our judgments, these are a wall. If we can look behind, peek behind the veil, look what's going on behind the stage, maybe we'll learn something. Maybe we'll understand something in a deeper way. Seek to know that which transpires behind that which appears. Ibn Arabi. Seek to know that which transpires behind that which appears. Murshid's words. There's only one thing that is truly just, and that is to say, I must not do this. But when you say or expect from another person, we may be wrong. So we can only, we take ourselves to task without judging others. We take ourselves to task. I must not do this. The mystic develops their mind in this manner, purifying it by thought, feeling, and action, only following one line of thought. Pure means free from a sense of separateness. This is the one line of thought, free from the sense of separateness. Whatever difference in principles of right or wrong religious faith may show, no two individuals will ever differ in this one natural principle. Every soul seeks after beauty, and every virtue, righteousness, good action is nothing but a glimpse of beauty. I remember being at a retreat with Murshid Avira, and the retreat was on healing the inner child. It's a beautiful retreat and very deeply impressed upon me some things that she taught over that weekend, and that's when I took my initiation. I thought, I need to know more from this person and on this path. But someone had asked her about a child. I didn't get the sense it was about them, but I actually thought it was maybe about their own child. What does one do if one suspects there's been some abuse? Maybe by another family member or whatever. And some of you may understand this yourselves from your own experience. And Murshid Avira said, the cure is to have the child concentrate on beauty. Whatever that child thinks is beautiful, a flower, a picture, a stone, have it concentrate on beauty. That was the cure. So there can never be enough beauty in the world. And of course, Murshid says, towards the one, the perfection of love. Love, he's talking about that here. harmony, limiting our own judgments and harmonizing with the others, understanding one's own mind and taking up the mind of the other from our own thoughts. What is this person thinking? We have a lot of opportunities for that in our political world, don't we? So what is the opposing thought? What does that mean? Love, harmony, harmonizing with others, and beauty, great healing. Dictum, we could say. So I have one more Wazifa. We have maybe 8-10 minutes left. And I want to kind of wrap this also around these other two Wazifas, which I hope you will see as a progression. Ahad, the center in a circle that has no circumference. Wahid is that thing, that the diversity that emerges from unity. And this one is called Wasi. Now, Wasi is spelled W-A-S-I apostrophe. And in this dialect, that apostrophe means something. It means kind of it almost sounds like Wasi. It's like a sound. It's not anything we do in our language, but it's kind of beautiful. And I love to study this because I try to see what's going on in my body and the various energies within the body. So it's Yawasi. It's a little stop after that. Okay. Now, what does Wasi mean? It's all pervading and all embracing. So we've gone from the dot that's in the circle that has no circumference to Wahid, which is this all-pervasive diversity emerging from unity, one source. And now Wasi is all-pervading and all-embracing. So it's also ever-expanding. It has to be. If there's no circumference of the circle, it has to be getting bigger, 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 bigger. So, but it's also a very healing Wazifa, healing mantra word. It means allowing old boundaries to melt down, so we're not rigid, so that we can relax and merge into an inclusive state. Not I am me and you are you and you stay there and I stay here. No, we're inclusive. Wasi is an antidote for all who are locked into rigid habitual patterns. So I know some of us, myself included, can have some OCD. Things have to be lined up a certain way. I call it being a good designer, by the way. But anyway, we have those patterns. We have them for different reasons. They made us feel safe when we were young. We needed to feel safe. So it helps us to, it's an antidote to those rigid habitual patterns and boundaries. It's the door for the opening of the heart, and there is a connection to Yafetah in it. Yafetah is the opener of the way. This is the opener of the heart. And Wasi is the infinite, the all-surrounding, embracing presence of God. So even in all the stuff, even in all of our confusion and strife, if we have it, perhaps you don't, I do sometimes, it means God is embracing us. We are in the presence of God. And if we can turn that way and look that way, it's helpful. And it is said in the Holy Quran, wheresoever you turn, there's the face of God. Wheresoever you turn, there's the face of God, or there's the essence of God. So let's do Wasi. We'll just do it 11 times, and then I just have one more quote before we close. And if we want to have some spiritual conversations, I'll bet we can. So, 11 times. Yawasi. 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 Yahwasia. 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 So I want to say one more time, as we work with these wazifas, especially for those in our immediate initiatic Sufi circle, think of that. Remember, the center of a circle that has no circumference. For Ahad, for Wahid, it's this constant emergence from unity into diversity. So therefore, it's all God. It's all God. It's all coming from God. So we have this sort of this big bang that's widening and widening. And Wasi is the all-embracing one that's containing it all for us. So please try to work with this. It's a new beginning this new year. Try to expand in this way and feel this embrace and become this embrace. A quote. I passed away into nothingness. I vanished, and lo, I was living. And Murshid uses this quote, and then he says, all who have realized the secret of life understand that life is one, but that it exists in two aspects. Again, very Buddhist, because in Buddhism we talk about relative reality or existence, and we talk about the absolute. And again, Dalai Lama gave a beautiful, beautiful teaching on this, because the relative is everything we're experiencing all the time in our life. And the absolute is this other reality of it, that nothing really exists, especially nothing dependent upon itself. And so it is all the, manifestation of the constituents of its parts. So it's a very interesting thing when you do these dialectics and you start to look, you know, is this a glass of water? No, it was sand. It was it water? Where did the water? I mean, you know, you just keep dissecting till you get to the idea of nothing is really exist in the way that we understand it. It changes our mind. So he gave this example again in this teaching. And Joe probably has a better take on that because he's a better student than I in Buddhism. But he gave an example. He said, you know, if you're in the relative reality and there's a truck coming towards you and you're in the middle of the road, you might say, that truck doesn't exist. But the truth is, in that reality, it does. And you better get off the road or it's going to kill you. You know, you might say, this is the ultimate, you know, or absolute reality. And nothing really exists. Well, it does. So we have to be, you know, it's divine mind and human mind. We're straddling those two aspects always, and to try to, you know, where we are on that pole or on that ladder, you know, which of these rungs or where are we on it, you know, where are we on it? We can move that, you know. So one last quote by Iqbal, Sufi mystic Iqbal. I wandered in the pursuit of my own self. I was the traveler, and I am the destination. I wandered in pursuit of my own self. I was the traveler, and I am the destination. So, can we close with the Khatum? Is that okay, Moin? O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, united with love, harmony, and beauty. Help me.
Okay. The Lord of heaven and earth.
Lord of heaven and earth. Thank you. Lord of heaven and earth. Heaven and earth. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth. Open our
Open our
hearts,
hearts
that we may hear thy voice, which constantly comes. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide us, men, women, people, everything. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Again, blow these sacred syllables into your hands and bless yourself. If there's anything that has happened here today in this time together, if it's a benefit, may it benefit all beings. And if you're on our mail list, wonderful. If you're not and want to be, if you put that in a chat, we'll be sure to add you to our mail list. And these teachings are always available through sufi-message.org. You go to events and teachings, and there's a whole history of these teachings. They appear, the video, the audio, the study guide as well. Okay?